Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring responsible data use, collaboration, and professional practice. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill. Because, I mean, I want you to imagine the scenario for a second here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Imagine just, you know, hitting send on a routine project update.
Right. Something we all do like 10 times a day.
Exactly. But imagine accidentally bankrupting your company's credibility simply because you didn't check the version history on a single spreadsheet.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a nightmare scenario, but it happens way more often than people think.
Right. Like in modern professional environments, the way you manage information isn't just some administrative overhead anymore. It's not just busy work. It is like the literal foundation of institutional trust.
It really is the foundation. And what we need to focus on today is the actual mechanics of that trust.
Yeah.
Because the way you handle data right now, you know, even in just regular academic settings, it's basically a direct preview of how you will handle complex, high-stakes situations in your career tomorrow.
So it's like a practice run.
Exactly. Our goal here is to really look at the mechanisms behind responsible data use. We want to show exactly how treating information with rigorous care translates into making you an indispensable, highly trusted collaborator.
I love that phrase, institutional trust, because I feel like when we hear terms like data practices, it's super easy to assume that's just, you know, an IT compliance issue.
Mm-hmm. Like a box to check.
Yeah, exactly. But what actually happens in the architecture of a team when data is handled poorly? Like, what is the measurable fallout for you, the listener, when you're trying to navigate a collaborative digital environment?
Well, the fallout is systemic. In professional settings, trust isn't just this nice, warm feeling. It's actually a measurable reduction in friction.
Okay, how so?
Well, when a team's data practices are sound, the time spent verifying, double-checking, and, you know, just second-guessing each other, it basically drops to zero.
Ah, right, because you just know it's good.
Exactly. But when data practices are irresponsible, you introduce massive friction into the workflow. You open the door to severe privacy violations. You see the rapid spread of misinformation simply because there's no mechanism for checking accuracy.
Which I'm guessing directly leads to some pretty flawed decision making.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you build a predictive algorithm or, say, a financial forecast on unverified data, the output is structurally compromised from day one. And ultimately, it just results in a total loss of operational credibility for the entire team.
It kind of makes me think of, well, it's like handling unverified data is like introducing a contaminated specimen into a highly sterile lab.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. Like, it doesn't just ruin that one specific test. It actually invalidates every subsequent experiment that shares that same environment. Like, if you take a shortcut and introduce bad data into a shared workspace, you haven't just made a mistake on your little part of the project. You've literally contaminated the entire team's output.
That is exactly how the mechanism works. Once the environment is contaminated, the friction just skyrockets because suddenly everyone has to stop what they are doing to audit the entire system.
Which is super frustrating.
Unbelievably frustrating. But, you know, if we invert that, we see the immense professional advantage of getting this right.
Okay. Tell me about the positive side.
Well, when you consistently employ responsible data practices, you completely eliminate that friction. You facilitate this really high-speed collaboration because your team knows your work is structurally sound.
Right.
It ensures ethical decision-making. And honestly, it actively elevates your professional standing.
Right.
Because you become known as the person who maintains the integrity of the lab, using your analogy.
I want to be the lab integrity person. So the goal is to maintain that sterile, high-integrity environment. But how do we actually architect that when we're working with multiple people?
That's the challenge, right?
Yeah, because collaboration usually means more hands on the data, which inherently means more risk of contamination.
It does. And it basically comes down to operating within three core frameworks. First is professional responsibility.
Okay. What does that look like in practice?
This dictates that data must be used ethically and transparently, meaning the provenance of your data, where it came from and how it was processed, must always be clear.
Got it. Origin story matters. What's the second?
Second is collaboration. This is the structural protocol for how teams actually communicate and share that information responsibly.
Okay.
And third is ethical practice. This is sort of the overarching commitment to ensuring that your data workflows protect both the individuals represented in the data and the organization using it.
Okay, but wait, I have to push back a little on the first one. Because isn't transparency often weaponized in corporate environments to just, like, micromanage teams?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Right. Like, how do you maintain data transparency without turning it into a total surveillance state where everyone is just demanding access to every single raw file and unfiltered data set just to prove you're being transparent?
That is such a critical distinction to make. Transparency in data practice does not mean absolute unrestricted access.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. In fact, giving everyone on a project access to sensitive raw information is a massive security vulnerability. Real transparency is about process visibility, not raw data exposure.
Process visibility. Okay, break that down for me.
It's about clear communication and accountability regarding how and why data is being used. You achieve transparency by clearly documenting the methods you use to get your results.
Right.
Being explicitly open about the limitations or gaps in your data and maintaining a very clear workflow. You can be entirely transparent about your methodology without ever violating the privacy of the underlying raw data.
That makes a lot of sense. So it's less about, you know, giving everyone the master key to the building and more about providing a highly detailed blueprint of how the building was constructed.
Exactly. That's a perfect way to look at it.
Which brings us to the actual execution. Like, how do we, as professionals, put these frameworks into action? What are the specific mechanisms we should be employing day to day?
Well, there are four practical mechanisms you really need to nail. First, you have to protect confidential information.
Right, which sounds obvious, but how?
That requires implementing what we call the principle of least privilege, meaning a collaborator is only given the minimum level of data access necessary to perform their specific function. Nothing more.
Keep it strictly need to know.
Exactly. Second, share data responsibly. This means utilizing secure encrypted channels rather than just, you know, casually emailing sensitive spreadsheets around.
Well, we've all seen that happen.
Yeah.
Too many times. Third, rigorously verify information before communicating your findings. And fourth, always adhere to the baseline ethical and professional standards of your specific industry.
I want to look closely at that third mechanism, verifying information before communicating findings. Because if we look at modern digital workflows, it operates very much like a high-speed digital assembly line, right?
It really does. It's continuous flow.
Yeah. So if you are stationed at the middle of that line and you don't do your quality control, if you don't verify the data provenance before passing that component down to the next department, the final product fails.
Absolutely.
And if you're the one who passed along the contaminated part, you're the bottleneck. You're the reason it broke.
Exactly. You become a node of failure. And thankfully, we have incredibly sophisticated digital tools available today to prevent the exact scenario from happening.
Like what? What should we be using?
Well, platforms like Google Workspace, Microsoft 365, and Notion are fundamental to managing this assembly line safely.
But how are we actually leveraging those platforms to enforce these concepts? Because, let's be real, I think a lot of people just view a Google Doc or a Notion page as just a blank piece of paper on a screen.
Right, just a digital notepad.
Yeah. So how do these tools actually enforce the principle of least privilege or data provenance?
You have to look at them not as digital paper, but as environments of accountability.
Environments of accountability. Okay.
Yeah. For example, the sharing architecture in Microsoft 365 or Google Workspace isn't just about sending a link so someone can read it. It's about granularly permission control.
Like giving someone viewer rights versus editor rights.
Exactly. But even deeper. You can restrict a file so that it cannot be downloaded, printed, or even forwarded by the viewer.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes. That is the principle of least privilege in action. And in an environment like Notion, you can build out relational databases that automatically track metadata.
So the tool itself acts as the auditor.
That's wild. It really does. The most powerful feature across all these platforms is comprehensive version history. It acts as an immutable ledger.
Meaning nobody can secretly change the numbers.
Right. If a data set gets altered, the system records exactly who changed it, down to the keystroke, and exactly when it happened.
So you don't have to guess who contaminated the lab specimen.
The ledger tells you. It builds structural transparency and accountability directly into the daily workflow without requiring a manager to constantly look over your shoulder.
That is so powerful. Let's ground this in a high-stakes scenario, though. I want to look at a case study of a team actually deploying these tools and rules to fix a broken workflow.
Sure. Let's look at a university research lab that was tasked with analyzing some highly sensitive demographic data for a major grant.
Okay. High stakes.
Very high stakes. And initially, their workflow was completely fractured. Information was just siloed on individual hard drives. Yeah. Researchers weren't sure what subsets of the demographic data they were legally allowed to use in their public abstracts, and operational trust among the team was practically non-existent.
Because nobody knew what anyone else was doing.
Precisely. Mm. Which meant work was being duplicated, and worse, unverified data was slipping into their drafts.
So what was the architectural fix? Because you can't just call a team meeting, say, hey guys, we need to communicate better, and expect a highly technical problem to just solve itself.
Right. Morale-boosting speeches don't fix bad data pipelines. The fix was entirely structural. They implemented strict data provenance protocols. They utilized their workspace architecture to define really hard boundaries.
What did that look like?
Well, they created an encrypted, restricted access database for the raw demographic data, which only the principal investigators could even access.
Principle of least privilege right there.
Exactly. Then they created a separate, entirely distinct environment for anonymized, presentation-ready data.
Oh, I see. So they literally separated the raw material from the assembly line.
Precisely. And they instituted a hard rule. No statistic could be moved into the final report environment unless its provenance was verified and documented in the system's ledger by two separate researchers.
That seems like a lot of steps.
It does, but what they discovered is counterintuitive to a lot of people. Implementing strict boundaries and rigorous verification steps doesn't actually slow down teamwork. It dramatically accelerates it.
Because you eliminate the friction of second guessing.
Yes.
Right. When the researchers call a statistic from that presentation ready folder, they know with absolute certainty that it has been verified and anonymized. They don't have to waste time auditing it themselves. They can just execute.
Exactly. When the rules of the road are clearly defined and enforced by the environment itself, the team can move incredibly fast without the fear of a catastrophic error. It proves that their ultimate success wasn't just about analyzing the data efficiently.
It was fundamentally about managing it with absolute professional responsibility.
Spot on.
And that responsibility is paramount, especially when you're dealing with demographic data, because the real-world consequences of getting it wrong are massive. It's not just a failed project, it's a failure of professional ethics.
It is, and to fully understand the societal mechanics of how data impacts the real world, the materials we're looking at point us to three highly influential books.
Let's hear them.
They are Weapons of Math Destruction, Data Feminism, and Factfulness.
Okay, let's dive into the mechanisms explored in those books, because a title like Weapons of Math Destruction, that suggests that data isn't just passive information, right? It can actually be an active, destructive force if the architecture is flawed.
Oh, incredibly destructive. That book brilliantly illustrates the mechanical failure of algorithmic feedback loops.
Feedback loops.
Yeah. When you build a predictive model, whether it's for, say, evaluating teacher performance, approving bank loans, or deploying police resources, and you train that model on historically biased or unverified data.
Right.
The algorithm doesn't just reflect that historical bias, it scales it, and it actively reinforces it.
Oh, I see. So if a predictive policing algorithm is fed historical data that unfairly targeted a specific neighborhood.
Yes, exactly.
The algorithm will predict more crime in that neighborhood, which then sends more police there, which naturally results in more arrests.
Right.
Which then feeds back into the algorithm as new data justifying the initial prediction.
Exactly. It is a completely self-fulfilling destructive loop. It denies people opportunities and misrepresents entire demographics, all under the guise of objective mathematics.
That is terrifying.
It is. That is the destructive potential of irresponsible data use. Now, the second book, Data Feminism, tackles this by examining the power structures behind the data.
What do you mean by power structures?
Well, it forces us to ask, who is actually collecting this data? What is their inherent bias? And whose context is being completely ignored?
So data doesn't just magically appear.
Right. It emphasizes that data is never completely neutral. It is always collected by humans, and humans have specific motivations.
Which makes the third book, Factfulness, so interesting as a counterweight. Because if data can be destructive and inherently biased, like we just talked about, Factfulness focuses on the mechanics of using data to find objective ground truth, sort of shielding us from those exact biases.
Yes, exactly. Ethical practice is the ultimate shield against those destructive feedback loops.
So how do we use that shield?
When you commit to rigorous verification, when you actively question the provenance and the context of your sources, and when you ensure your data architecture prioritizes fairness, you are actively dismantling those weapons of math destruction.
You're utilizing data to illuminate reality rather than allowing a flawed algorithm to distort it.
Beautifully said.
Thank you. So we've covered the fundamental architecture, we've talked about the digital tools that enforce it, and we've looked at the societal stakes of getting it wrong. Now it's time to translate this directly to you, the listener.
Right, the practical application.
Exactly. How do you operationalize these concepts today?
This brings us directly to the practical application activity. We highly recommend that you sit down and actually architect your own personal responsible data use guideline.
And this isn't just some abstract intellectual exercise,
yeah,
right? Like, actually write it down. Document it.
Absolutely. Write it out.
And to make this actionable, let's break down the how. How do you actually build this guideline? Because there are four required operational elements you need to define.
Right.
First, outline your privacy considerations. You have to ask yourself, what is the specific classification of the data I am handling? And honestly, what is the worst case scenario if it gets exposed?
You have to know the stakes.
Exactly. Second, establish your sharing rules. This is where you apply that principle of least privilege we talked about. Define explicitly, what is the absolute minimum amount of data my collaborator needs to execute their task?
And third, you must define your ethical standards. Do not leave this vague.
Right, put it in writing.
Establish your hard lines for accuracy. For instance, what is the minimum verification required before you will hit send on a report?
Is it two pairs of eyes? Is it a cross-reference check?
Exactly. And fourth, set your collaboration expectations. Document exactly how you will utilize the environments of accountability we discussed earlier.
Like deciding if you will require version history tracking on all shared documents.
Right, or if you will mandate a specific folder structure for verified versus unverified data, like the lab in our case study did.
I really love this idea. Treat this as building a personal professional manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally the operational blueprint for your future career.
It really is. And if you can articulate and execute these four elements right now, you will walk into any future workplace, whether that is a corporate headquarters, a research laboratory, or a fast-moving tech startup with a massive structural advantage.
You'll be miles ahead.
You really will. You will possess a rigorous framework for navigating the digital complexities that routinely overwhelm other professionals.
Just true.
So to recap the core mechanics of what we've covered today, responsible data use is the actual mechanism by which institutional trust is built.
Mm.
Ethical practice is the most efficient way to eliminate operational friction and elevate your professionalism. And true, high-speed collaboration requires the implementation of transparent workflows and structural accountability.
Which brings us to a crucial point of reflection. As algorithms increasingly automate how we process, how we share, and how we verify facts in the workplace, I want you to ask yourself a highly provocative question.
This is a great question to think about.
If an artificial intelligence system hallucinates or fabricates a critical insight, and it's based on your sloppy, unverified data reporting, who ultimately broke the trust? The machine, or you?
That is the defining question of the modern digital workplace, because the technology will just scale whatever you feed it.
It's an amplifier.
Exactly. The responsibility for the initial input always remains human.
The foundation always starts with the professional choices you make right now. We encourage you to stay curious, stay exceptionally responsible, and stay future ready as you navigate your digital careers. And to solidify the mechanics and strategies we've discussed, please make sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities.
Highly recommend doing that. And if you want to explore the deeper architectural and societal impacts of data that we examine today, we highly recommend reading the reference materials, Weapons of Math Destruction, Data Feminism, and Factfulness.
They will totally change how you see the digital world. Thank you so much for joining us for this session. Remember the mechanics of the digital assembly line we talked about? The next time you hit share, send, or publish, ask yourself, are you maintaining the integrity of the lab or are you introducing the contaminant? Think about it. See you next time.